It's one constitutional issue that we've got going on, but in the state, but nationally, a lot to look at as well. And we're having a couple of experts come to Chapel Hill and talk about it. And we have got Michael Gerhardt here with us from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill to talk about an event coming up next week. And I'll just let you kind of introduce yourself and that event a little bit first, Michael.
Hi, thanks for having me. So our big event, which is coming up on Tuesday at 5:30 in Memorial Hall, is we are hosting one of the great journalists in the United States, Nina Totenberg, who has covered the Supreme Court for NPR for a long time and has won every award journalism has to offer and then some. And so she's going to talk with me for about an hour about the Supreme Court and the presidency, and there can't be anything more timely or significant right now, at least as far as the news in the country is concerned.
Absolutely. We continue to hear about the president, the race every day, but like we talk with Public Policy Polling's Tom Jensen all the time about how the public opinion stands in one place with the current vacancy on the Supreme Court, and yet we're not seeing a reflection of that action by representatives. So it certainly is a timely topic. What can you tell us kind of about your background in relation to the Supreme Court and how you got to be so involved and interested by this?
Sure. Well, I've had the privilege of being on the faculty at the University of North Carolina for over a decade, and before that taught constitutional law at William & Mary. So I've been teaching constitutional law for, I hate to say, more than 25 years. At the same time, I've done a lot of work with Congress, and particularly with the Senate, on a wide range of constitutional issues, including Supreme Court appointments. So I've had the privilege of being able to work on and consult on the appointments of 5 of the 8 sitting justices of the Supreme Court, including working as special counsel to the Senate Judiciary Committee for the last 2 Supreme Court appointments, President Obama's appointments of Justices Sotomayor and Kagan.
So as a general assessment, have you seen anything from all of your years studying this and being involved, anything remotely similar to what we're looking at right now with the nomination of Merrick Garland 6-plus months ago almost?
No, there's nothing remotely similar. In fact, this is historic. Judge Garland, the nominee to the Supreme Court, has now set a record. We are now in the midst of the longest delay between the time of a presidential nomination to the Supreme Court and any Senate action. This is the longest delay thus far, and it's expanding that record every day. So this delay is historic, and it will probably last at least until the election, if not beyond.
And, you know, some years we may be able to go through and not to say it's ever an inconsequential decision from the Supreme Court, but it certainly seems to have more of a spotlight recently with the decisions here in North Carolina in the court system and ultimately going through the federal court process and a decision from the Supreme Court. But right now, you can virtually write everything up before it's even heard by the Supreme Court of how it's going to be handed down with likelihoods of a 4-4 decision. So how does that impact the entirety of how we are operating on a day-to-day basis under certain laws?
Normally, the Supreme Court has 9 justices. Mm-hmm. And what that means is, in a close case, you might have a decision that's 5-4. Mm-hmm. And that has not been unusual. It's not common for it to occur, but it's not unusual in a very, very big case. The critical thing here, I think, is that this is the seat that was once occupied by Justice Antonin Scalia, mm-hmm. who happened to teach me constitutional law. But Justice Scalia had been on the court for nearly 30 years, and he was, without a doubt, the most impassioned conservative voice on the Supreme Court. His death has, of course, left that seat vacant, and thus the court has 8 justices, and that's been raised a couple of different kinds of issues, each of which is huge. One is what happens when there's a 4-4 split, and that basically means it's as if the court was never there. Mm-hmm. So the decision has no significance whatsoever. And then the other big issue, of course, is whoever takes this seat will then perhaps have some control over the Supreme Court. That'll be the critical 9th seat and certainly possibly 5th vote in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, if President Obama makes this appointment, or for that matter, if, for example, Hillary Clinton makes the appointment, you then would have, for the first time in decades, a majority of Democratic-appointed justices of the Supreme Court. And that means a lot to both sides. And so that's a major reason why some people wouldn't want to see Democrats have the appointment and wanted to preserve the seat as best they can for somebody who's more like Justice Scalia.
Well, so from that perspective of wanting to kind of hold the power that is within that ultimate deciding seat, a lot of times, what is the constitutional duty of Congress when hearing this?
Well, the Constitution grants the power of nominating Supreme Court justices to the president, but he does so with the advice and consent of the Senate. So that's as much as the Constitution really has to say. And then we're left with figuring out what does it mean to give the Senate the power of advice and consent of nominations. And it seems to allow for a wide range of discretion. The Senate can do little or virtually nothing, or it could hold a hearing, and it could also hold a floor vote. In this case, the Senate has done virtually nothing, which is essentially sort of just wait until at least the presidential election in the fall. And that might fall within the range of discretion the Senate has, but then the question becomes, what do we think of that discretion? And then what's the Senate going to do later this year?
And that's always the million-dollar question, I guess. Okay, here's what the Constitution says. Now, what does that mean? And the reading between the lines there a little bit.
Right. And the Constitution grants discretion to our elected leaders. It vests within the national political authorities, the president and the Senate, the power over Supreme Court nominations. In a sense, President Obama did his job by nominating Merrick Garland, who is, as a Supreme Court nominee, the person with the longest record of service as a lower court judge in history. Mm-hmm. And now the ball, in a sense, is in the court of the Senate. And it's the Senate's job to either do something with that or perhaps extend its obstruction further.
And so with this, I want to just one more question about Justice Garland, and then we can move to the event a little bit as well. But whenever he was put forward, you know, all of the resume that you could read off for him and a couple of things that may have been seen even as appeasements possibly to the Republican side of the Senate of being, you know, honestly, he's a little bit older.
That's right.
And he has he's not as far left as could have been nominated, I guess, by a Democrat.
I think that's right. And so clearly President Obama might have been trying to do several things with this nomination all at once. Mm-hmm. He picked somebody whose credentials, I think, are beyond dispute. Everybody really concedes that he's more than qualified. That's a given. It's not easy to achieve that status, but in his case, it's a given. And then at the same time, as you point out, he's actually the oldest nominee in decades. And that might be a way to kind of provide a little bit of incentive to the other side, so to speak, to consider this person as well. He is ideologically, as best we can tell, middle of the road, moderate, which might be also an effort to find some common ground or consensus. But none's been achieved yet.
And that's why I think you mentioned a couple of times with the caveat of between the election and actually takeover of whoever the next administration is, if the election ultimately goes to Clinton, there's no way, I guess, they could it would be harder to justify a continued obstruction of anything after, you know, you've got 4 years now at least of a president.
Yes, and in fact, our guest next Tuesday, the Frye Distinguished Visiting Professor Nita Totenberg, has interviewed President Obama, and one of the things they did talk about is what might happen after the presidential election. We don't really know anything for sure, but one possibility is if, for example, the Democratic candidate wins, does that give an incentive to Republicans in the Senate to perhaps consider going with President Obama's nomination rather than one that might come from the next president?
Exactly.
That's a wild card here. We'll have to see how it gets played.
Well, so what can people expect from that conversation coming up on Tuesday?
Well, we're going to cover a lot of ground and do so quickly, but I think in a very interesting and hopefully entertaining way. So Nina Totenberg has covered the court for decades, and so she's got a lot of great stories to tell. She's broken a lot of great stories, and we can talk about some of the histories she's helped to make and been able to report on the Supreme Court, including, for example, in the historic hearings on Justice Clarence Thomas' nomination, when she was one of the critical reporters to uncover the possibility of a problem that Justice Thomas had, which was possibly there's a charge that he might have sexually harassed an employee. That came out in the hearings, and then the hearings became quite heated. Moving to more recent history, she's been not just covering the court, but also the president's involvement with shaping the court. And we'll talk about how presidents have done that, how the court's been shaped, what are important decisions the court's made in that time period, what we can expect from the current court, what might be possible over this period after the next election, what she thinks might be the more interesting cases, more significant cases have been covered, some of the more interesting justices, maybe some of the things she thinks have not been done so much credit to presidents and the court. There's a lot of ground we can cover that hopefully will be of interest.
So logistically, what's the rundown here for timing and where's everything happening?
It's going to be at 5:30 in Memorial Hall, and the admission is free. But, of course, there'll be a line, so first come, first serve, so to speak. The program will go from 5:30 to roughly about 6:45. The bulk of it will be my conversation with her, in which I will speak as little as possible and allow her, of course, to share her insights and experience and wisdom with us. And it will be hopefully an illuminating discussion in which she can tell us about how the presidents have shaped the Supreme Court and how the Supreme Court in some ways has shaped the presidency. Mm-hmm. That's an important relationship that I think we're going to learn a lot more about on Tuesday.
Well, I think that's an interesting topic always. And, you know, maybe this year with all of the light that has been shed on this, we'll have more of an appetite from an audience as well. Was this set up before all of this, or did it just kind of fall?
Well, I think the timing has turned out to be quite fortuitous. I think, of course, we have a Frye Distinguished Visitor every year.
Right.
This year we've got one who can obviously talk a lot about current events. And North Carolina is, in many respects, ground zero. A lot of this, as you were sort of pointing out, the election for Senate here as well as the presidential election here will be critical. I mean, citizens of the state will have an important say on the future of the presidency as well as the future of the Supreme Court.
Well, Michael Garrard from the University of North Carolina here at Chapel Hill, thank you so much for coming in, and best of luck with everything on Tuesday. I hope it's, like you said, it's going to be a large crowd there, so hopefully everybody can get there early and get a good seat.
We look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. WCHL News Time is 3:45.
At Great Clips, we understand every minute counts.